Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 14th of April 2026. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers chosen by Margaret Simpson and Kristen Dennison and read by Janet Perlman and Kristen Dennison. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lovell. Before we start, here's some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise and sunset times this week will range from 6:13 on Monday 13th of April to 6:01 on Sunday 19th of April. And the sunset times this week will range from 19:59 on Monday 13th of April to 20:09 on Sunday 19th of April.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxhawk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxhawk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
The following notice is from Oxford City Council Home Improvement Agency, read by Simon Garrett.
Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency. Oxford City Council's Home Improvement Agency is dedicated to helping older adults, disabled and vulnerable residents within Oxford City to live safely and independently in their own home. The agency service is available to people who are vulnerable and need help repairing, maintaining, or adapting their home. The agency provides services as follows: small repair service, repair and assistance, disabled facilities grants, keeping warm at home. Our handy person service is DBS checked. They carry council ID badges and have branded Oxford City Council vans to give you peace of mind. Our handy person will carry out works to your home at a subsidised rate of £20 an hour, which is for labour only. Materials can be provided by yourself or may be purchased by our handy person if you are unable to do so. But time spent to purchase materials will be added to the total of hours spent on the job. To qualify, you must be age 55 or over, regardless of health condition, and if below 55, you must have a disability or severe health problem that prevents you from carrying out the repair yourself. Some works to reduce falls may be done for free, so call us for more information. You can pay the handy person directly and safely using our handheld chip and pin device when they visit, and they will issue a receipt. The handy person service is one of the ways we help our clients live safely and independently. So, please call our advisor for free advice and more information on what is available. To contact us, please send an email to hia@oxford.gov.uk or call us on 01865 252788. We look forward to supporting you in improving your home in the best possible way.
A petition is calling on the CEO of Sainsbury's to fix up its Bicester store following concerns over its condition. Donna Ford, an independent councillor for Bicester East, has launched a petition over growing concerns about the deteriorating appearance of the Sainsbury's store and the area outside in Pioneer Square. The petition has received more than 160 signatures. She is calling on Simon Roberts, CEO of Sainsbury's, to personally visit the store and commit to a comprehensive fix plan. She said it is disheartening to see a prominent establishment lagging in providing high-quality services. She said, "Our local Sainsbury's plays a crucial role in our community, serving countless families who depend on it for their daily shopping needs. Unfortunately, over time, the condition of the store has deteriorated significantly, affecting both the shopping experience and the store's contribution to the community's image. By Mr. Roberts visiting the store in person, he will be able to witness firsthand the obstacles the community faces. His intervention, working alongside staff and local leaders to draft a realistic and impactful plan for improvement, could pave the way for transformative change." Ms. Ford added, "Our local Sainsbury's plays a crucial role in our community, serving countless families who depend on it for their daily shopping needs. Bicester deserves a store that mirrors the vibrancy and pride of our town. A revitalized Sainsbury's would not only uplift the spirits of its dedicated customers, but also attract new visitors, contributing positively to Bicester's growth and economy."
Parts of the A30 and M40 were shut by highway officials as motorists were issued with a warning by officials. The A34 dual carriageway was closed overnight on Wednesday between the Hinksey Hill interchange for Oxford and Marcham Road interchange for Abingdon southbound. This work was being carried out by Highways England and was enforced between 9 p.m. and 8 a.m. the following morning. Meanwhile, Highways England also shut the M40 motorway southbound between junction 12 and 11 for Banbury. Lane closures and slip road closures were enforced while maintenance work was carried out.
There are complaints as passport prices have risen to over £100 for the first time. Passport fees increased on Wednesday, April 8th, with the cost of a standard online adult application rising to £102, marking the first time it will exceed £100. Children's passports will also increase to £66.50, alongside rises across postal and premium services. The change has been slammed by Emily Kerr, Green Party councillor for St. Mary's, who is a mother to young children. Criticizing the price hike, the politician said, "The rising cost of living, from food to passport fees, is hammering families across the board. Our country is seeing almost Victorian levels of inequality. That's why we need green policies like a wealth tax and better local facilities so people can enjoy holidaying at home. I'm currently in Devon with my family, and we just went cycling on the car-free Tarka Trail. I want to see more investment in nice local things like this for everyone to enjoy. It's good for health, the local economy, and the environment." Tom Vaughan, a travel insurance expert based at Confused.com, also commented on the price change, warning people could get caught out by the change. "With prices of new passport applications rising above £100 for the first time, it's more important than ever to check when your passport expires," he said. "If it's due for renewal soon, it's worth factoring in the higher costs now in your travel budget. It's also important to make sure your passport will be valid for any upcoming trips, as nothing ruins holiday excitement faster than realizing too late that your passport isn't valid. And it's easier to get caught out than many people think. Our research shows that less than half, 43%, of holidaymakers are aware that their passports for EU travel must be issued within 10 years of departure, which often leads travelers being confused about when they need to apply for a new passport. Sorting an emergency passport will now cost £239.50, and that's before you consider having to take time off work to travel to a passport office, which are often far away for last-minute appointments. For families, it can be even more challenging, as fast-track child passports can take up to a week to arrange, assuming you can get an appointment in time. Travel insurance won't cover the cost of an emergency passport or any missed flights, so with fees increasing next month, it's worth checking now if yours needs renewing before the new fees come into effect.
Every good meal has a story to tell, but at Raymond Blanc's Brasserie Blanc in Oxford, that story is more of a love letter to French cooking. To many, French cuisine is rightfully considered some of the best in the world. The French know their way around the kitchen. And he who knows it arguably better than many other people is the 76-year-old Frenchman, self-taught, who has taught Heston Blumenthal and Marco Pierre White a thing or two in his time. Blanc today is very much now Oxford's own chef, having opened up his first restaurant, Les Quatre Saisons, in Summertown in 1977, where he still lives. Today he doesn't direct the only hugely successful Brasserie Blanc business, but his French DNA runs deep through it. Take the steak tartare it serves, for example. On paper, it's a fairly simple dish to make, consisting of finely chopped raw beef mixed with capers, shallots, Dijon mustard and egg yolk. But it relies heavily on having the freshest ingredients to really stand out, which Brasserie Blanc does. Unlike any other restaurant in Oxford I ate at recently, not for newspaper reviews, for which I will not name. Brasserie Blanc's chefs absolutely wipe the floor with anyone else, not least the well-established restaurant elsewhere in the city. The reason why Brasserie Blanc excels on its food, as evidenced by the steak tartare, is because it has stuck to its core value to celebrate fresh seasonal ingredients. The French celebration continued with the main when the rabbit arrived at the table. Having never eaten Bugs Bunny, it's difficult to fully explain whether it was comparatively good or not. All I can report is that the next time I do order Peter or Roger from the menu, the bar has been set very high indeed. Certainly the leg meat was melt in your mouth perfection, fall off your bone delightful, and beating heart to any love letter to French cooking. Coupled with the ultra smooth mashed potato, French beans and mustard sauce, it made me want to sail across the channel, grow a moustache and roll the bottom of my jeans up. After eating the main, I fancied smoking a cigarette before driving to the nearest Citroën dealership in my Bury to buy myself a 2CV. It was a shame I was driving back home many miles away, though, because a glass of French wine would have gone down an absolute treat. Brasserie Blanc offers its diners the art de vivre philosophy, an evening of utter pleasure, celebration and delight. A true love letter to the food of the nation we can only ever secretly adore. An historic livestock market has been given the green light to relocate. Tame Farmers Auction Mart has been granted planning permission by South Oxfordshire District Council to move its operations to a new purpose-built site on the edge of Tame. The relocation, expected to take around 12 to 18 months to complete, will secure the future of one of the South East's most important livestock trading hubs and address long-standing concerns about congestion, noise and odour in the town centre. Richard Roth, chairman of Tame Farmers Auction Mart, said, "We're delighted with the South Oxfordshire District Council's Planning Committee's resolution to grant planning permission for the new livestock market site, subject to dealing with a number of planning conditions. Once these conditions are resolved, this will secure the future of livestock trading in the South East at a time when a number of markets across the country have closed in recent years. The market has operated in Tame since the Middle Ages and moved to its current site on North Street in 1951. Its relocation to land near Christmas Hill Business Park will create a modern state-of-the-art facility designed to meet the needs of farmers, staff and the wider community. Mr. Roth said, "While the resolution to grant planning permission is a significant milestone, further work is required to deliver the planning consent. At present, the future use of the current market site remains uncertain, with a number of uses being considered by its owners, South Oxfordshire District Council, who have been supportive of the application for the new market. The project involves a partnership with the W Lamb Developments Limited, who will deliver the commercial business units on part of the application site, which will help fund the project and are part of the application." Mr. Roth credited the contributions of Will Taylor, surveyor with Briggs and Stone, for his advice and guidance throughout the project. The new market will feature covered pens and improved facilities for hauliers, with the potential for expanded operations and increased sales. It is hoped the new move will attract additional buyers and sellers and enable more operating days. Thames Market Charter was awarded in 1215 and has maintained an unbroken connection with livestock trading ever since. The current market is operated by shareholders who took over from South East Marts in April 2000. On market day, the site employs 15 staff. Regular sales are held on Wednesdays for prime sheep, Carl ewes and rams, and on Fridays for store cattle and sheep.
An unlawfully built gypsy and traveller site near Didcot has been refused planning permission for the second time by the council. The application for four gypsy and traveller pitches on land at Wattle Cottage Farm by the George at Upton Pub on Prospect Road in Upton near Didcot has been refused by the Vale of Whitehorse District Council. Each pitch would comprise one mobile home and one touring caravan, together with space for parking and maneuvering, as well as two shipping containers for storage related to keeping horses. It relates to an enforcement investigation launched in June 2024 following the erection of four unauthorized chalet buildings for residential use on the same site. The applicant claimed that the chalet buildings are the same as the four mobile homes proposed in the application due to their size, and said they could be moved to specific locations if and when planning permission was granted. But the council's planning officers found the structures built on the land were vastly different to mobile homes, as they were constructed on purpose-built concrete and brick foundations with inlaid services and are permanent timber structures including verandas, decking, and covered porches. The farmland and equestrian site in Upton has a long planning history related to different uses of the land dating back to 2002. Objections were received on the latest application from Upton and Chiltern Parish Councils and Specialist Officers for Ecology, Drainage, and Landscape. The Environment Agency objected in principle to the development as the site is in Flood Zone 3B, a functional floodplain, defined as having a high probability of flooding. Along with the Joint Oxfordshire Resilience Team and the Council's Emergency Planner, the agency's objection said the site is too vulnerable to flooding to make it safe for residential use. A further 52 objections were received from the public during consultation, quoting a range of issues taken with the plan. Concerns included that this new plan was not materially different for the similar application refused permission last September, as well as the impact of the proposed use of the site on the character and amenity of the village. The council's planning officer said, "In my opinion, the lack of a 5-year supply of gypsy and traveller sites, to which I give significant weight, together with the personal circumstances of the applicant and his family, to which I also attach significant weight, do not outweigh the planning harm of the proposed development." The application was refused on the grounds of the harm it would cause to the North Wessex Downs natural landscape and because of flood risk, highway safety, loss of biodiversity, the value of the countryside, and the intentional unauthorized nature of the development.
A district councillor has warned that dangerous dogs are out of control after his Cavapoo was mauled to death. Councillor Eddie Reeves said the incident happened in West Bar Street, Banbury, and left him and his five-month-old baby covered in blood. In a Facebook post, the Charwell District Councillor warned people with babies or small dogs to stay well away from an address in West Bar Street. Mr. Reeves said, "Our darling Cavapoo, Coco, has just been mauled to death while walking in town with our five-month-old baby. It happened in an instant. There is blood all over me and our baby, neither of whom were bitten. Thames Valley Police are on their way, but the number of young men with dangerous dogs in this country is out of control. The dogs need to be put down." In response to his post, Councillor Andrew Crichton said, "Eddie, I'm so sorry to read this. Absolutely disgusting that this has happened. May Coco rest in peace. My condolences to you and your family." Banbury MP Sean Woodcock said, "This is really awful, Eddie. I'm so sorry to read this. My condolences to you and your family." Councillor Simon Weston added, "This is awful. So sorry to read this." Thames Valley Police has been contacted for more information.
A bookseller who is selling an incredibly rare book by Oxford's J.R.R. Tolkien for £65,000 in his shop said he was trembling to discover the edition. Songs for the Philologists is the rarest book by the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit author, with just 15 copies thought to be in existence. One of them is now sat safely in Tom W. Ayling's antique shop in Howbury Park, Wallingford, bringing the book to the market for the first time since 2014. Mr. Ayling said, "When it arrived, I could not believe I was finally holding a copy of this rarity in my hands. I even trembled a little picking it up. I know it might be the only copy I will ever handle, so it is a privilege that my rare bookshop in Wallingford can offer it for sale to our worldwide client base of Tolkien collectors." Mr. Ayling is an antiquarian bookseller who specializes in the work of Tolkien, who wrote much of his work while living in North Oxford. Songs for the Philologists contains 13 poems by the author, written while he worked at Leeds University with E.V. Gordon in the early 1920s. Typewritten copies of the verses were given to students at University College London in the 1930s to print on their Elizabethan press as an exercise by Dr. A.H. Smith. However, when Dr. Smith realized that he had not asked Tolkien's permission to reproduce the poems, he did not distribute them, and many of the poems left in the printing room were later destroyed in a fire. It is thought that just 15 copies survive, 12 owned by institutional collections in the UK and US, leaving vanishingly rare opportunities for collectors to get their hands on one. The last copy to come up at auction was in 2003, and in the 23 years since, only two other copies have publicly come to market, both in 2014. Mr. Ayling added, "I have been looking for a copy of Songs for the Philologists for so long that I had nearly given up on finding one. For Tolkien collectors, the chance to acquire a copy can be once in a generation, and going forward, future opportunities will be even fewer as remaining copies enter major collections. The rare book dealer tracked down a copy in Australia 2 weeks ago, which had been taken there by Professor Arthur Brown, 1921 to 1979, who taught literature at University College London and was an associate of Tolkien. He shared the Oxford professor's interest in Anglo-Saxon and Icelandic literature, and alongside his copy of Songs for the Philologists, probably obtained during his tenure at UCL. Professor Brown also owned Tolkien's original illustrated manuscript for Visio de Dorist.
Hundreds of steam rail enthusiasts enjoyed train rides at Didcot Railway Centre over the Easter weekend. There were steaming days from Good Friday to Easter Monday at the Steam Railway Heritage Centre next to Didcot Parkway Station. During the steam days at the centre, trains were running and visitors could enjoy unlimited rides, as well as calling in at other attractions, including the museum, the engine shed, the shop and the cafe. Theo, whose surname has not been disclosed, was a visitor before the Easter weekend, dressing up in a top hat to pose as a station master and wave a green flag in front of a steam engine. Frank Dumbleton, a volunteer at the centre, has been taking photos of trains and volunteers for many years. He said, "Theo visited in a period outfit, top to toe, from topper to polished leather shoes, as would have been worn by railway station masters long ago. He was given a green flag to wave and set a train on its journey."
A petition has been launched to urge the government to intervene in delays to the opening of to passengers of the East-West rail line between Oxford and Milton Keynes. Calls for progress continue to be made by people who are frustrated by the delay to the line's reopening to passengers after nearly 60 years, despite construction being completed on the section from the city to the Buckinghamshire New Town in 2024. Only freight trains are running on the route, which connects Oxford, Oxford Parkway, and Bicester to Milton Keynes, and eventually on to Bedford and Cambridge. Among the issues which have delayed the official opening of the £7 billion new train line is an ongoing dispute between the Rail, Maritime and Transport, RMT Union, which represents train guards and drivers, and East-West Rail Line operator Children Railways. A newly launched petition is calling for the government to end the deadlock. It said, "The East-West Rail Line was due to open last December for passenger services. It's still not running. The government needs to break the deadlock between Children Railways and unions. There needs to be effective negotiation to resolve differences and find a solution. Services need to run urgently. People move to the East-West Rail Line corridor for work and to use the train for other reasons. Some have lost jobs because of the delay. Others, who expected to take the trains, are struggling to battle rush hour traffic to places like Oxford." Rail Future, a campaign group promoting the expansion and the efficacy of rail transport in the UK, said a dispute between the RMT Union and Chiltern Railways over driver-only operation is to blame for the delays. The union said Chiltern Railways wants train drivers to open and close the doors at stations with no train guards required, something which it has condemned as unsafe. David Richardson, spokesperson for the Thames Valley branch of Rail Future, said, "We wholeheartedly support this petition and would urge anyone wanting to see better rail services in Oxford to support it. We have suffered major disruption while the new bridge at Oxford Station is put in to support an extra platform and new rail services, yet here we have a restored rail route that is open to freight trains, but no passenger services are running." He said the petition would be discussed at the campaign group's AGM on May 12th in West Oxford Community Centre. "Any further delay would be very, very frustrating," Mr. Richardson added. The RMT union disputes that the delay has been caused by its dispute with the train operator. A union spokesperson said, "It is simply inaccurate to blame delays to the East-West Rail on our dispute when the project has been held back for years by indecision, rising costs, and unresolved planning issues. The industrial dispute only affects one part of the route, and the biggest delays sit squarely with those in charge of managing the project." They added delays to the reopening are due to the central section between Bedford and Cambridge still needing to be built, vacancies on the line, issues with the stations which have been built, and new railways having to be designed, agreed, and approved. The spokesperson said, "We are opposed to driver-only operation because it is vital there is a second safety-critical person on board. This can include being responsible for door operations, but it is a highly varied role, dealing with passenger safety, particularly in emergencies. The guaranteed presence of a second onboard safety-critical staff member provides a safer environment and reassurance to passengers, particularly women and girls traveling alone. RMT members are committed to delivering a safe and reliable railway, but they will not accept being used as cover for failures in project management." A spokesperson for Chiltern Railways said, "Since being announced as operator of the first stage of East-West Rail between Oxford and Milton Keynes in March 2025, we have been working at pace to get everything ready for service to begin on the new line. Significant progress has been made, including the hiring and training of 44 train drivers, the creation of a new colleague facility at Bletchley, and the fit-out of a new modern station with step-free access at Winslow. However, There is work still to finish to prepare the trains on Winslow Station and on the operating arrangements for the new route. We are continuing our work on these areas in conjunction with industry colleagues and will provide updates as soon as we are able to.
Thames Valley Police have made a public plea after they seized a scooter. Thames Valley Police took the e-scooter from the road on Sunday after they saw a young lad riding it in Banbury. A spokesperson for the police's Cherwell unit said, while out on parole today, neighbourhood officers came across a young lad riding an e-scooter. He was spoken to about the laws surrounding e-scooters and why they cannot be used on public roads, paths or spaces. The scooter was subsequently seized. Since then, police have warned parents not to buy their children e-scooters as they constitute a public risk and will be seized by the force. The spokesperson added, "Parents and guardians, please stop buying e-scooters for your children."
A High Court legal challenge has been launched against the council's decision to grant planning permission for Oxford United's new stadium. Friends of Stratfield Break, FOSB, have launched the legal challenge, arguing that Cherwell District Council acted unlawfully in approving the development on Greenbelt land. Permission for the 16,000-seat stadium at the Kidlington Triangle was granted planning permission in August, pending several agreements that were finalized in February. FOSB has consistently raised concerns about the impact on wildlife and aspect of the planned road closures. Lawyers at Lee Day, acting for the group, sent a formal pre-action protocol letter setting out its legal objections to the decision. But Lee Day said the council refused to acknowledge such concerns, and FOSB has now officially filed proceedings seeking permission to apply for a judicial review. A key issue concerns the council's alleged treatment of advice from Natural England on the ecological status of woodland at Stratfield Break. Lee Day said Natural England advised that the evidence as to whether the woodland is ancient was inconclusive and recommended a precautionary approach. FOSB claims that the council accepted an assumption that extensive traffic management measures could be set up and removed within a very short period of time, despite there being no realistic evidential basis for that conclusion. FOSB contends that these alleged errors were material to the decision to grant planning permission. The group is seeking to quash the permission. The case will now proceed to the permission stage, where a judge will decide whether the judicial review should go forward to a full hearing. FOSB is represented by Ricardo Gama, human rights partner at law firm Lee Day. An FOSB representative said, "We have engaged with the council throughout this process and made our concerns clear at every stage, including through formal legal correspondence. Unfortunately, those concerns have not been addressed, leaving us with no option but to bring this judicial review. We believe the decision is flawed and that the impacts of this development on the adjacent woodland and transport have not been properly considered." Mr. Gama added, "Our clients felt they had no choice but to file court proceedings because the council has failed to address their concerns over the impact which the stadium development would have on an ecologically important woodland and on local traffic. They look forward to putting their arguments to a judge." A spokesman for Cherwell District Council said, "The council is confident in its decision and in the event of any judicial review will robustly defend its position." Oxford United spokesman said, "We are aware of reports that judicial review proceedings have been filed with the High Court. A rigorous and detailed planning process was followed by Cherwell District Council and we look forward to supporting them defend their decision."
There is a £51 million park and ride site built by a council which is still unused more than 2 years after its completion. The 850-space car park in Ensham off the A40 was finished in January 2024, apart from a bit of landscaping. But local people say it has to remain shut for Oxfordshire County Council to find the money to build the road in and out. Plans for this facility on the A40 included a new roundabout to make it easy to access from either direction. Images taken this past week show that the site remains unoccupied, with the first buses and cars not expected to arrive until 2027. Oxford County Council confirmed that although the construction was complete, it would not be in operation until the start of next year.
West Oxfordshire District Council's green garden waste bins go sticker-free from this year. If you have signed up for the garden waste collections this year, you will not receive a bin sticker. West Oxfordshire District Council has significantly invested in in-cab technology to permit the advancement. This system allows crews to instantly see which household in Woodstock, Burford, Chipping Norton, Charlbury, Carterton, and Whitney has a subscription. Collections will be fortnightly, and bins must be presented at the curbside by 6 a.m. The cost of a new subscription is £52.50 and is valid from April 1st to March 31st each year.
Compensation claim payouts against Oxfordshire County Council by drivers who have hit a pothole have risen by 545% in 5 years, prompting claims that the roads crisis is not being controlled effectively. In the calendar year 2025, the Highways Authority forked out a record £250,000 to drivers whose vehicles have been damaged from hitting a hole in the road, new data reveals. It is a sharp rise from the 2021 figure of 38,000 and has been rising every year since. In 2022, it was 44,000. 2023, it was 121,000. And 2024, it was 165,000. In total, the council has paid out £612,000 in the past 5 years. Successful claims have also been rising from 2021 too by 524%. Indeed, the number in 2021 was 153, but by last year, that figure grew every year to reach 955 successful claims. Meanwhile, the number of claims received by the council from frustrated motorists was 469 in 2021 and 2,000 in 2025, slightly down from the timeframe's peak in 2024. Critics have questioned whether the council has got a grip on the pothole crisis, while the council argues it's doing it best with the money available. Leader of the Conservative group, Liam Walker, said the sharp rise raises serious questions about whether the council still has control of the pothole situation. The West Oxfordshire councillor said, "When taxpayers are footing an ever-increasing bill for damage caused by our roads, it suggests the problem isn't being tackled effectively enough." Conservative councillors put forward a £1.3 million budget amendment in February that would have fixed an extra 20,000 potholes per year, but the Lib Dem administration, with the support of Green and Labour councillors, voted against our plan. James Robertshaw, a councillor and volunteer who marks up potholes around the Whitney area, says he is not happy that after all his efforts, the potholes are not being repaired. "There are only 5 inspectors to check the work. It is an appalling state of affairs, and the contractor should be held to account," he said. Elliot Keck, campaigns director at the Taxpayers Allowance, said, "Taxpayers will be rightly furious to see £250,000 of their money being paid out in pothole compensation. The fact that payouts have rocketed sixfold in just 4 years is a damning indictment of the council's road maintenance strategy. Residents pay sky-high council tax and expect safe, functional roads in return, not a cycle of vehicle damage and payouts. Oxfordshire County Council needs to stop throwing money down the drain and start filling in potholes." Oxfordshire County Council in 2025 spent around £3.4 million fixing nearly 30,000 potholes. Drivers reported a little over this number, but workmen tasked with fixing potholes are also encouraged to fix any potholes they see. In the first 2 months of this year, the council has spent £700,000 repairing 5,500 potholes, but 8,000 have been reported in the first 2 months. These figures can change. A spokesman for Oxfordshire County Council said that the state of the roads was very much a national problem and is not confined to Oxford's roads. He said the figures for 2021 and 22 are looked upon as an exception worldwide due to the impact of COVID and therefore being fewer cars on the roads due to lockdowns. That does go in some way to explain the increase from 2023 onwards, he said. Andrew Gant, Oxfordshire's County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Management, added that the authority does the best we can with the funding available to fix the roads. We have been dramatically increasing the number of crews out repairing potholes this winter, following the sharp rise caused by the weather, he said. And we will shortly be starting our annual resurfacing and surface dressing programmes aimed at extending the life of more than 1 million square metres of carriageway.
Oxon Travel is switching to WhatsApp as Oxfordshire County Council gradually quits X. Oxfordshire County Council has announced it will be using WhatsApp for specific travel updates from Friday, April 10th. Oxon Travel is used by the County Council to provide daily travel updates, including road closures and traffic collisions. In January, it announced it will stop using X, formerly known as Twitter, over concerns about the rise in hate speech and abuse toward women and girls. Numerous other public bodies in Oxfordshire have also decided to leave the site. As part of its phased approach, the County Council will leave X entirely by Friday, April 17th. It will use other social media channels and its website to keep people informed and engaged. This includes Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Nextdoor, Blue Sky, WhatsApp, and YouTube. Ofcom's investigation into the AI chatbot Grok to create and share sexualized images of children is ongoing. Liz Lefman, County Council leader, said she welcomed Ofcom's decision to investigate the site under the Online Safety Act in a meeting last December. The County Council said public bodies have a responsibility to stand up against hate and abuse, particularly when it targets women and girls. Where platforms fail to provide a safe and respectful space for communities, we must make clear and principled choices about how we communicate. South Oxfordshire and Vale of White Horse District Councils have removed their profiles. Charbel District Council has kept its profile to avoid imitation, but it has stopped posting.
Householders and businesses in Burford lost electricity for part of Easter Sunday. The unplanned power cut, which affected 169 homes in the OX18 postcode area, affected customers on Easter Sunday morning, said Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks. A spokesman for the energy provider apologised for the cut and said that engineers had worked to fix the problem as quickly as possible. At the time, he said, engineers have arrived in the area, they're working hard to fix the problem and will get your power back on as quickly as possible. We have had reports of damage to our network. When this happens, the power will automatically turn off to keep everyone safe. An engineer was also on site for another power cut in Wallingford. The subject of sat-nav versus maps has prompted many car driving readers to share their experiences. Janice Grzeczewski's sat-nav threw in an unexpected right turn off the main road when she was attempting to visit Glastonbury during a holiday. She said, thinking that was a bit strange, we did as we were told and ended up in the middle of a housing estate, closely followed by a van which had also been using sat-nav. We had to drive back to the main road and continue as before. Moral, you can't put your trust in sat-navs, follow the road signs. Gillian Bancroft agrees, but added, on our summer holiday last year, the hedges and trees had grown over the road signs and it was impossible to know where to turn. At one junction where there was a huge green major A road sign, it was completely overgrown and we had to guess whether it was a left or right turn. David Willoughby, now in his 80s, opts for both maps and sat-nav. He says, our car always has a fairly up-to-date road atlas in it, and I will almost always take an ordnance survey map with me when we are visiting an area that is not well known to us. My feeling is that a combination of the two is the best answer. The team at Hill End Outdoor Education Centre are celebrating 100 years since children first came to Hill End for adventure and outdoor learning. They've launched the Design an Awesome Logo competition for children aged 4 to 12 years to create a logo that captures the spirit of Hill End. Find out more at hill-end.org/news/logo-comp and enter before the 30th of April.
A breakthrough magnet from Oxfordshire is helping power the future of quantum computing. Abingdon-based Scientific Magnetics, SciMag, has shipped its 20th superconducting magnet designed for quantum computing applications, marking a key milestone for the company and the sector. Quantum computers use the principles of quantum mechanics to process information faster than conventional computers, enabling them to solve problems too complex or large for even the most powerful classical computers. Clint Juvia, managing editor of SciMag, said, delivering our 20th superconducting magnet for quantum computing applications is a significant achievement for our team. The shipment follows Chancellor Rachel Reeves' announcement of a £2.5 billion investment in the UK's AI and quantum technology sectors. In her May lectures on March 17th, Ms. Reeves outlined plans to make the UK the first country to deploy quantum computers at scale. Stuart Gall, CEO of Abingtrans PLC Medical and Industrial Imaging Division, described the delivery as a significant milestone for the company. He said, with its combination of superconducting magnetic technology and deep environmental expertise, the company is positioned right at the heart of this new technology, supplying essential components that underpin the qubit architecture needed to scale the industry at large.
Oxfordshire Art Weeks is the UK's oldest and biggest open studios and pop-up exhibition event, and this spring it will be blooming with colour. Of the hundreds of art weeks, painters, potters, photographers, silversmiths, glassworkers, textile artists and furniture makers who'll be delighted to welcome you, nearly 200 are within and around the Oxford Ring Road. In its first week, kick-starting the festival from the 2nd to the 10th of May, five venues in Cumnor Village invite you in. These include two garden studios, a home pottery open for the first time this year, and the ever-popular Archangel Studio, where you will find breathtaking works including mirrors, using sustainably gathered shells in patterns that shimmer like shoals of fish, or murmuring birds in flight. Alongside vibrant mixed-media paintings and monoprints conveying the beauty and endeavour of renewable energy, inspired by a 9-day trek in the Alps on the tour of the Matterhorn. Then, between the 16th and 25th of May, the many Oxford venues throw open their doors. In Botley, Becca Rowland is a fused glass artist who describes her career as telling stories with data, in which recognising patterns and underlying structures are key. She brings that same sensibility to her colourful glasswork through the strong use of patterns, perhaps from mathematics or genetics, a fascination with straight lines and a focus on what fills the gap. Alongside, you'll also find the alchemy of silversmithing with sea glass, and nearby there are several exhibitions of paintings and printmaking, and Nick Thorne's indoor and outdoor sculpture in steel on show in an outstanding designer garden. There is also an intriguing 3D sculpture by Art Week's newcomer Kim Taylor at the Old School Collective, who repurposes boxes and found objects to create an intricate 3D dreamscape in which she incorporates sea glass, old china and wood for miniature trees. Summertown is always a hotbed of creativity, packed with Art Week's venues. Discover the unexpected with Ayako Ono's breathtaking tessellated origami artworks, sculptural forms shaped by light, rhythm and shadow. Look out too for Antonia Bruce's dance drawings, ballet and contemporary, in ink on Japanese calligraphy paper. Ellis Stacey's wooden sculptures in the Turrell Scripture Garden, each combining traditional craftsmanship and patterns, mythology and folklore, with modern line and design and asymmetric abstraction in the sculptures. He is one to watch.
A new book traces the roots of theater back to ancient storytelling. Written by Didcot resident Esme Bates, From Fire to Footlights takes readers on a historical journey. The work highlights how storytelling was initially shared in caves and around fires, which laid the groundwork for what eventually became theater. It explores various aspects of the evolution of storytelling, including prehistoric storytelling, ritual and communal performance, ancient theater traditions, and the impact of Shakespeare and classical drama. The book also looks at the development of realism and modern theater. Ms. Bates, who has a background in drama education, theater, and creative writing, approaches theater as more than just entertainment. She presents it as one of humanity's oldest and most potent cultural expressions. Her book celebrates the enduring human instinct to gather, perform, and tell stories. From Fire to Footlights traces this remarkable cultural journey from prehistoric cave storytelling and ritual performance to the rise of dramatic traditions that shaped theater across centuries, Ms. Bates said. Early communities gathered in caves and around firelight, sharing stories of survival, myth, and adventure.
The West Ox Arts Team will showcase the creations of 13 artists from across the county from the 25th of April to the 30th of May at the WOA Gallery in Bampton, OX18-2JH. The collection spans an impressive range of mediums and styles, from printmaking, glasswork and handcrafted jewellery, to sculpture in wood from Jill Solway, Kirsty Granger, Judith Harden, David Stone, Sally Middleton, Janet Lewenden, Melanie Phillips, and more.
Traders, charities, and organizations around Oxfordshire have voiced alarm over the impact of soaring fuel prices amid the crisis in the Middle East. Pump prices across the UK have seen a sharp increase since the US and Israel launched a campaign of strikes in Iran on February 28th. In retaliation, Iran partially closed the Strait of Hormuz, an important shipping route off the country's coast. Vessels have been hindered from safely traversing the passage since the beginning of the conflict, disrupting worldwide fuel trade. Data from the RAC suggests the average price of diesel in the UK has gone up by 25.5% from 141.6 pence a litre before the conflict to 177.68 pence a litre at the end of March. The price of unleaded rose by 13.7% from 132.05 pence to 150.11 pence a litre over that period. Loose Cannon Brewery in Abingdon delivers beer 5 days a week, consistently, to 90 pubs in the local area, although often that number is higher. Anneli Baxter, the general manager, said the business was suffering from higher fuel costs. She said, "There's been quite a dramatic impact on us. Also, customers who visit our brewery shop are starting to consider the cost of driving to the brewery to collect beer." And she said members of the public, squeezed by the rising cost of living, including fuel, were increasingly weighing up whether they could afford to pop out for a drink. She added, a reduction in VAT at pump prices would go a long way. Dave Richardson, a spokesman for the Oxford branch of the Campaign for Real Ale, agreed. He said the breweries deliver the beer to the pubs and the lorries. There's no other way of doing it, so they are having to face that additional cost. The Oxford Food Hub, which has vans out 6 days a week delivering to around 250 organizations, said that the increase in fuel costs was making its work even harder. Chief of the charity, Steve Hammond, said, "We still have two diesel vans, and since the end of February, we've noticed an increase of 31.63% in fuel costs. As a smaller charity, every penny counts. Any rise in fuel spending makes it harder for us to continue our regular operations of saving and redistributing surplus food across the county. Small businesses are increasingly concerned by fuel costs, with several saying it is adding to an already pressured landscape." Robin Holmes Smith, owner of the Granary Delicatessen in Watlington, which has offered a delivery service, said the true impact was yet to be felt. He said, "The difficulty will be in a few weeks' time when prices go up. If the distribution charges go up, then prices will go up." He said he was cautious when looking ahead, but that his main concern was the rise in minimum wage. Meanwhile, Ryan Dawson, owner of Oxford Pantry Hampers, called it an extra financial strain along with the other costs of being a small business. He said that if orders came in close to his South Oxfordshire base, he tried to deliver the products himself, and that the rise in petrol costs was eating away at his profits. The ambulance service for Oxfordshire said it expected to see its costs rise, despite operating a mixed fuel strategy. A spokesperson for the South Central Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust said, "Ultimately, these rises will increase the trust's costs, given the large number of vehicles we use to provide our services." The Motoring Action for Oxford Group said the situation was causing much frustration and worry. Member Robo Lee said private motorists had no way of absorbing or passing on increases in costs, while businesses relying on petrol will be looking to absorb as much as possible. He said the one thing that arises in conversation is how slow our government is acting on this issue, whereas a handful of countries have already reduced their fuel duties in VAT. Martin Prue, owner of Milton Services Station in Milton-under-Wychwood near Whitney, said his margins on fuel had effectively halved. The company, which was founded in 1965, also sells cars and has a workshop, and Mr. Prue has said these areas were currently subsidizing the fuel business. Saj Malik, an Oxford city councillor and taxi driver, reported a downturn in trade as the rise in fuel costs made everybody extra cautious. He said, "Oxford is a student city. We have many quarters that are very deprived. Our prices remain the same. We cannot pass on anything to customers as we have all struggled." Mr. Malik called on the government to take action, including by reducing fuel duty, a tax levied on petrol, diesel, and other road fuels. However, the government has said that as energy prices rise, people cut back on other spending that would usually be subject to VAT. A government spokesperson said, "Millions of motorists filled up their cars and traveled over the Easter weekend. Our fuel system is robust and continues to work well." While committing to keep the taxes under close review, the government has pointed to an extension of the 5 pence fuel duty cut from this month to September. On Wednesday, U.S. President Donald Trump and the Iranian leadership announced a 2-week ceasefire, with the theocracy agreeing to allow shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. Despite this, uncertainty remains about the safety of ships traveling through the strait.
An Oxford pharmacy, which recently closed, could be replaced with an ice cream shop, plans submitted to the council have revealed. Cowan's Pharmacy in St. Michael Street, Oxford, was run by pharmacist Adil Cowan after he set up shop independently, following the closure of the pharmacy that he ran in the Boswell's department store in 2020. But this newspaper reported in August 2021, shortly after its opening, that Cowan's had been refused a licence to dispense NHS prescriptions after competitor Boots objected to the plans. It is not known what caused the recent closure of the pharmacy in St. Michael Street, but the company was dissolved in February this year. Mr. Cowan could not be reached for comment. Now, new plans have been submitted for the former pharmacy to be turned into an ice cream shop called Aromi. an application for alterations to the existing shop front at 1 to 3 St Michael Street has been submitted to Oxford City Council. The proposal includes repainting the shop, adding new signage, and installing a sash window to serve ice cream and other products directly to customers on the street during the summer. A planning document by Clark Architecture and Design, submitted on behalf of the applicant, said, "This proposal seeks to enhance and enliven the existing outdoor dining experience through the creation of a small opening. This feature will provide direct access to the restaurant's interior while serving as an outlet for ice creams to be served straight to the street, adding a level of theatre to the current street scene. The application is set to be decided by the council by mid-May." As well as historic buildings, Oxford University is home to some historic and beautifully landscaped gardens, ranging from formal college quads to expansive meadows and the UK's oldest botanic garden. Some of these date back centuries, while others have been developed more recently. Some of the larger gardens combine formal borders, informal planting, orchards, meadows, and quiet cloisters. The most notable ones include Magdalen College, which has colourful summer borders near the cloisters, and a large meadow beside the River Charwell, with a herd of fallow deer kept since the 18th century, with hosts of daffodils, bluebells, and other wildflowers in the spring. Of note is Addison's Walk, a circular riverside walk, famous among writers like C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. Christchurch has a vast grazed meadow between the Thames, Isis, and Charwell rivers, with magnificent views of the dreaming spires of Oxford. There is a fine Fellows Garden, Memorial Garden, and colourful borders by the entrance from St Aldate's. As the Gardening Club found on their visit in 2021, Worcester College gardens are surprisingly large, with herbaceous borders, lakes, orchards, lawns, shrubs and trees. It is arguably one of the most biodiverse college grounds, with waterfowl and many fine mature trees. In the spring, the Nuffield lawn is covered in spring bulbs and colourful blossom. New college gardens are famous for lying alongside the old Oxford City wall and include long, colourful herbaceous borders, mature trees and lawns. The main garden with its mound has a unique, secluded, almost medieval atmosphere. The garden quad of Balliol College is very colourful in late summer, being known for its borders, roses and quiet seating areas. There is also a small but elegant Fellows Garden behind the college. St John's College has another large garden with fine lawns and borders. The garden quad has symmetrical beds and classic Oxford architecture. Wadham College Fellows Garden has a fine lawn surrounded by borders, shrubs and trees. Some of the smaller colleges also have interesting and colourful gardens. For example, Exeter's Fellows Garden is beautifully secluded, but has some of the best views of Radcliffe Square from its high-level walk. St Edmund Hall is limited in space in the front quad, but in spring it has magnificent wisteria covering the buildings. Finally, some of the newer colleges have invested in their gardens and are worth visiting, for example, Green Templeton, Wolfson and St Anne's. While the Oxford College gardens are primarily for staff and students, most are open to the public at some time or other. Many can be visited for free during the Oxford Open Doors Festival in September each year, and several offer free entry to local residents throughout the year. Spending time in one of these gardens can be a wonderfully refreshing way to spend an hour or so, and is highly recommended. I've gardened for a living for over 60 years now, says Alan Titchmarsh, CBE, and for pleasure, almost 70 years. It's so heartening to think that something I love, carried out by thousands of extraordinarily generous garden owners, helps to improve the lives of so many people right across the country every day. For me, the National Garden Scheme is the heart and soul of Britain and proof of just what good can come from looking after your own little bit of the planet and sharing it with others. This spring, gardens big and small will open their gates, inviting visitors like you to wander among blooms and find moments of calm. The National Garden Scheme fundraiser reached a record of 3.8 million total this year, its most successful year yet, supporting nursing and health charities. With 3,000 gardens across the UK opening this year, including 500 newbies. Could you help make 2026 yet another charity record breaker? Bolter's Farm in Chilson, near Chipping Norton, will welcome visitors on the 3rd and 4th of May, along with King's Cottage, and by arrangement between now and September. Amanda Cooper, artist and garden owner, with her husband Robert, tells us, "We've taken part for over 10 years and were very pleased to be awarded the special NGS trowel last summer. The experience has been nothing but positive. We've had visits from the Netherlands and the USA. One fascinating scientist paying us a visit last summer wished to examine the tiny fig tree to see if a particular small white mite had migrated further north, and it had. Over the bank holiday, we might expect something like 200 visitors, plus privately organised small outings for local clubs and a large party from Germany. Garden visitors are a breed of their own, thoughtful, caring, gentle folk who enjoy the beauty and peace of this area. One couple spent the whole afternoon asleep on a bench in the sun last year. Our garden this year features a new little Wendy house that we got for our grandchildren. I'm forever looking to improve the garden's planting and structure. What I love now is how it evolves, as if it had a mind of its own, which it does." Oxford City Council's plan to build affordable housing on football pitches attracted more criticism from a community that does not want to see facilities axed. A plan to build 331 homes on council land at Sandy Lane Recreation Ground has been met with backlash since the project was approved last month. The £97.6 million scheme would see the four football pitches on the land, a site chosen for its proximity to the upcoming Cowley Branch Line project, transformed into 100% affordable homes development of council-owned housing. Even though the council has promised to provide new and improved football pitch facilities ready for community use before any construction begins, football clubs and other local people have condemned the proposal. Nick Duval of the Kidlington Recreational Trust said, "In my view, Linda Smith should be ashamed of both herself and her colleagues on the City Council. What right has she got to dispose of a recreation ground created to benefit the very residents that elected her council? Were these asset-stripping councillors not elected to serve and preserve the community? If selling these green spaces from under their feet is not a stab in the back to the residents, I really do not know what is. Sending these people down the road to Herschel Crescent sets a deplorable precedent for others to follow, and they will." He said that the plan would make disposing of further community public spaces a possibility for future councils to pay for projects. However, Oxford City Councillor Linda Smith, who represents Blackbird Leigh, said, "This is not the sale of an asset to generate income. It is part of Oxford Labour's plan to alleviate this city's housing crisis through using the City Council's wholly owned housing company to build homes. These 331 new affordable homes will include 261 new council homes for social rent. Taking local households in priority need directly off our housing register and improving the housing situation for approximately 1,200 local people. Around 300 children will have the benefit of moving into a safe, secure, efficient to heat and affordable council-owned home here, with brilliant football facilities just a stone's throw away. She added that planning policy and law gave councillors a robust process for assessing whether a site is suitable for development, one which Sandy Lane went through when it was allocated for housing and a new Cowley branch line station on the 2016 to 2036 local plan, as well as replacing the existing football pitches on a site 150 metres away at Herschel Crescent. The new development would create a high-quality green space using existing trees and hedges around the edges of the site for dog walking and exercise, plus new informal recreation areas. A woman living with stage 4 cancer is preparing to run the London Marathon. Runner, mother and Oxfordshire resident Sarah Demerges has raised £14,000 for MAGGIES, the National Cancer Support Charity, while living with adrenal cancer. She was diagnosed in 2020 during the height of the pandemic. Mrs. Demerges said, "It took me 2 years before I went to MAGGIES because I had to work up the courage to go in. But when I did, I found care, compassion and community. MAGGIES is a sanctuary and it's made a huge difference. I have met amazing fellow patients and carers, had brilliant advice, attended workshops and more. They have even supported me on how to speak with my children and just to always be honest." Despite her diagnosis, she's determined to complete the marathon, calling it a wild goal she felt she had to pursue. Her husband, Rob, and sons, James, 17, and Ed, 15, have supported her throughout. She said, "I've always been quite a determined person, and last year, when I told my husband, Rob, that I'd applied to do the London Marathon in 2026, he just rolled his eyes and said, 'Of course you have.' Rob and the boys are used to me making my mind up about something and doing it, even if I'm on active cancer treatment." Even though she once completed a Tough Mudder and a couple of 10K races more than 20 years ago, she hasn't run regularly in years. She eased back into training with 5Ks and progressed to running 11 miles by November. In December, she learned her tumours were growing again and that she would be taken off Mitotane, a treatment that she'd been on for 5 years. She also tore a calf muscle around the same time, forcing her to pause training, but she said she is slowly returning to running. Her cancer has since spread to her lungs. She completed 5 rounds of chemotherapy last year, though the treatment was not successful. She will hopefully be offered a new immunotherapy treatment alongside a different chemotherapy treatment called temozolomide. Despite her health challenges, she focuses on living life fully. She enjoys dinners with friends, watching her sons play sport and walking the family's dogs. "On difficult days," she said, "running feels less like a chore and more like a gift." Mr. Murches said, "I want people to know that even if you have cancer, you can still do things, you can set wild goals, and you shouldn't let anything stop you. I'm doing this for me and Rob and my boys and for MAGGIES." A swimming school is marking 15 years of teaching water safety. Puddle Ducks Oxfordshire, which runs classes for babies and children, celebrated the milestone with a community event in Uffington near Farringdon that brought together more than 300 families from the region. Becky Stenson, owner of Puddle Ducks Oxfordshire, said, "Celebrating 15 years with more than 300 people from our swimming community was a fantastic moment for our whole team. Families place a great deal of trust in us, and seeing so many of them join us to mark this milestone really shows the role our classes play in children's lives across the region." The event featured activities including a bouncy castle, soft play, arts and crafts, face painting, cupcake decorating, and a visit from the school's mascot, Puddle the Duck. Ms. Stenson added, "We're incredibly proud of every child who has learnt to swim with us, from babies taking their first splash to older children developing strong, confident strokes. Our team works hard to produce a safe and nurturing environment, and we look forward to supporting even more families in the years ahead." Puddle Ducks currently teaches 1,261 children each week across 15 pools.
Wallingford Accessible Boat Club is offering free river trips for disabled and less mobile people across Oxfordshire. The charity is launching its 2026 season on the River Thames, with bookings for its popular two-hour excursions opening on Monday, April 20th. The first trip of the season will set off on Wednesday, May 6th. John Jenkins, MBE, chairman of the Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, said, "We are incredibly excited about the upcoming season. Not only are we aiming for another record-breaking year, but we've also introduced a range of new features on our wheelie boat, Wow One, to make every trip even more enjoyable for our passengers." Following a successful winter recruitment drive, the charity has expanded its volunteer crew, allowing it to offer a more frequent schedule of trips. The boat will now run twice daily, 6 days a week.
Oxford City footballers brought some Easter cheer to young patients during a special hospital visit. Players from both the men's and the women's teams visited Oxford Children's Hospital on Tuesday, March the 31st, where they handed out Easter eggs, played games and spent time with patients and their families. Oxford City men's players Max Metcalf and Ewan Clark were joined by women's players Billy Bauer French and Rhys Ayers for this visit. Ewan Clark said, "It was a pleasure to go along and meet everyone. It wasn't just the patients, but also their families, and especially the staff who do an amazing job. We're very fortunate in Oxford to have the Children's Hospital. People come from far and wide to get treatment, and to have such a facility right on our doorstep is incredible." The hospital staff welcomed the gesture, saying it meant a great deal to the young patients. Oxford City Football Club thanked the co-op in Marston and Swindon for donating the Easter eggs for the visit.
A speedway clash between Oxford Speedway Cheetahs and Plymouth Gladiators, set to have taken place on Wednesday, April 8th, was postponed amid complex negotiations over the future of the city's stadium. The city speedway team spoke out on the decision taken by sports broadcaster Sports Information Services to stop covering greyhound racing at Oxford Stadium in Sandy Lane last week. The broadcaster has dropped Oxford and Suffolk Downs from its schedule in what it called a streamlining and rationalization of greyhound context. Oxford Speedway has said the decision and ongoing negotiations are having an impact on the Motorcycle Racing Club, which also operates from the stadium. Although fans were reassured last week that scheduled fixtures would be going ahead, it has now been announced that Wednesday's clash between Oxford Cheetahs and Plymouth Gladiators has been postponed. Oxford promoter Jamie Courtney said, "You will be aware that over the weekend, there have been a series of meetings following the termination of the deal between SIS and Oxford Greyhounds to stream racing from the Bet Goodwin Oxford Stadium. Inevitably, that decision and subsequent ongoing negotiations' impact on Oxford Speedway and I can confirm that Wednesday's BSN series meeting between the Cheetahs and Plymouth will not go ahead. We will, however, travel to the Coliseum on Saturday night to face Plymouth Gladiators, with the visit of Poole next Wednesday opening the official home season at the Bet Goodwin Oxford Stadium. Plymouth, and I must thank Mark Phillips for his understanding and cooperation on this, will now visit Cali on April 22nd to compete the BSN Southern Sections fixtures, a date Berwick were due to travel south to fulfill a championship fixture on. The Berwick fixture will be rearranged for later in the season. With complex and involved negotiations between a number of stakeholders, including ourselves, ongoing and the added inconvenience of a double bank holiday, I did not feel it was possible to run Wednesday's meeting. I firmly believe that it is short-term inconvenience, which will have long-term and far-reaching benefits for the Oxford Speedway and Oxford Stadium. British Speedway Promoters Limited and the Speedway Control Bureau have been kept updated regarding the situation, as has Oxford Greyhounds. I know there has been much online speculation and a lot of misinformation posted as fact. We will keep our loyal supporters and sponsors updated via the club's official channels. Concerns were raised that the decision to end Greyhound racing coverage at the Bet Goodwin Oxford Stadium could be fatal to the venue and would be disastrous to the sport after the announcement last week. But Kevin Boothby, Oxford Greyhound's promoter, said the club is in talks with Premier Greyhound Racing to explore a potential contract. The stadium needs both Speedway and Greyhounds to be financially viable long term, and the team said they are working together to make that happen.
And now football. Oxford United drew 2-2 after a late Portsmouth equaliser in one of the games of the Championship season. Dubbed a relegation six-pointer, the match saw four goals, one red card and five yellows, with nothing able to split the two clubs. Keshi Anderson's earlier opener preceded a controversial red card for Connor Ogilvy, Brodie Spencer then equalising early in the second half. Will Lankshire later put the Ewes ahead, but Pompey responding by levelling through Andrew Dotsall. A feisty Fratton Park spurred the hosts on to a lively start, Jamie Cumming preventing a near own goal from Kyron Brown early on. The ninth minute welcomed the opening goal, Anderson chopping onto his left foot and swiping the ball home after Colby Bishop headed it back to him in the box. An already manic stadium soon turned ballistic when Pompey left-back Ogilvy was sent off for a tackle on Stan Mills, the home support furious with referee Josh Smith's decision, one fan even throwing a bottle at Josh Smith. The Ewes looked shaken by the atmosphere as the hosts thrived off it, attacking with energy. Gustavo Caballero missed a huge chance to double the lead, firing over from inside the box after a low cross fell to him. An early second half penalty shout for Pompey was denied before the Yellows equalised 3 minutes in. Mills's powerful shot from range was parried by Nicholas Schmidt into the path of Spencer, who was there to score his first goal for the club. The Ewes continued well, Will Hawkes shooting over with a good run and cross from Mills failing to be met. Spencer controversially escaped a second yellow after a foul on Terry Devlin, which the home fans were incensed by. A deflected shot over from Mills preceded the huge moment when Oxford completed their comeback. After a corner, the ball found its way to Mikael Helic, who held off his man and floated a peach of a cross onto the head of Lankshire, who nodded into the top right corner. Pompey responded with energy, Jordan Williams seeing a shot headed away by Brown. Heartache hit for the Ewes in the 87th minute. Milenic Ali pulling the ball back to Dotsall, who slid the ball into the bottom right-hand corner. Late pressure came to nothing from Oxford, with the result leaving them still in the relegation zone. Pompey 1 point above them, 2-2.
Tottenham Hotspurs are planning to keep Oxford United loanee Will Lankshire at the club should they suffer relegation to the Championship. Spurs will reportedly scrap plans to send the striker back out on loan next season should they be relegated from the Premier League. They are currently placed one spot above the relegation zone with just a point more than West Ham, who are a third from the bottom. The 20-year-old is set to be given a chance to impress new boss Roberto De Zerbi, according to Sports Boom, if worst comes to worst for the North London club. With Lancashire becoming a fan favorite and standout star for the relegation-battling Ewes, Lancashire has bagged 10 goals and 3 assists in a season of struggle for the Yellows and has played 43 times in a breakout season for the youngster, who is on loan until the end of the season. It was recently reported that the centre forward turned down moves to higher-placed championship sides in January in order to see out the fight for survival in OX4, further endearing himself to the Ewes faithful. Lancashire's parent club, Spurs, are currently fighting for their lives in the Premier League, sitting 17th and 1 point above the bottom three. Staff at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium are apparently convinced that the England under-20s international has both the experience and pedigree to stake a claim for a regular first-team role. The Lily-Whites recently appointed former Brighton and Marseille boss De Zerbi on a 5-year contract, replacing Igor Tudor in an effort to stave off relegation, with the Italian seemingly trusted to steady the ship if the club does go down. Lancashire scored in the Ewes' most recent match against Portsmouth, diving onto the end of Michael Hellick's cross to nod the ball into the top corner at Fratton Park. Oxford then conceded late on to only manage a draw on the South Coast, with the on-loan goal scorer speaking to the press after the game. "It's definitely a disappointment," he said. "The end to the game for us, considering how hard we worked against the solid 10 men, I'd give credit where credit's due. I thought the boys were very good today. Football is difficult. I know it's a really tough place to come. We knew it would be tough. The fans were amazing. Our fans were amazing. It was a great atmosphere. It was tough out there. I'm really happy that I could score today, and just disappointing that it wasn't the winning goal."
A rare glimpse into Roman luxury will be on offer to historic archaeological site this year. North Lee Roman Villa volunteers have announced open days, giving visitors the chance to view a nearly complete 4th century mosaic floor. Set beside the River Evenlode near Witney, the villa was one of the largest in Roman Britain and once featured 16 mosaic floors and 11 rooms with underfloor heating. A Heritage England spokesman said, "Visitors can imagine the villa's former richness as they walk through the rectangular footprint of its walls." The open days will take place on the following dates: May the 30th and 31st, June the 27th and 28th, July the 25th and 26th, August 8th, 9th, 22nd and 23rd, and September 19th and 20th. Nearly 10,000 visitors have viewed the mosaic since 2019, when it reopened after nearly 3 decades. Volunteers have helped conserve and record the unique mosaic floor. The Friends of Raleigh Park will be holding a centenary meeting to celebrate the gift of Raleigh Park in North Hinksey to the city of Oxford in April 1928. The gift of the park was the third major benefaction by Raymond Fennell, who also gifted Hill End Centre and Whiteham Woods. The park was named after Professor Sir Walter Raleigh, who lived on Harcourt Hill. The meeting will be held in Seacourt Hall, Botley, on Saturday the 25th of April at 7:30 p.m. and all are welcome to attend. www.raleighpark.org.uk. Three very different gardens in Cumnor will be open on Sunday the 7th of June as part of the annual National Garden Scheme Open Gardens. This year, Tea, coffee and cakes will be available at the URC Hall on Lees Road as part of the event.
A bunny, a bee and a chicken were among a host of Easter characters who hopped together to brighten the lives of children and patients in hospital. Didcot-based charity Play to Give celebrated its biggest ever Easter egg drive, smashing all previous records. Donations made will help spread joy to patients and families in hospitals, hospices, with disabilities, and those in need. To celebrate, and with a spring in their step, charity volunteers dressed up in elaborate and fun Easter costumes, which also included a hen, cockerel, and carrot. Patients of all ages across Oxfordshire's hospitals, including the Children's Hospital at the John Radcliffe, benefited from an extra special dose of generosity as almost 2,100 Easter eggs were donated and handed out. Over 2 months, Play to Give appealed for donations for its yearly drive to collect eggs and chocolate treats for its annual campaign crusade. This year saw more donation points and more supporters than any other year take part, coming from Didcot, Oxford, Abingdon, Wantage, Whitney, and Newbury. Businesses, cafes, shops, gyms, school children, and dance groups all pitched in too. Thanks to funds received online, the charity was also able to purchase eggs and craft and activity packs. A record-breaking total of more than 2,070 Easter eggs were collected and distributed this year, exceeding last year's total by almost 400. Over 600 eggs alone were given to young patients across the Children's Hospital and Banbury Children's wards and areas, and to families spending the holiday period in the neonatal care unit. The dedicated army of volunteers spent many hours sorting and counting the goodies and were overwhelmed with the cracking support. Young carers in the county also benefited, as did adults with brain injuries and some struggling families in need. Older patients and patients across the Oxford University Hospital's NHS Trust will enjoy the chocolate. Oxford Sobel House and Summerfield House in Abingdon, as well as Viking House in Banbury's, also received bunny lots of joy. The charity, which will mark its 20th year next year, was created by 37-year-old Didcot man Andy Baker in 27. Mr. Baker was inspired to begin fundraising for the Children's Hospital, with the brain surgery age 12 being his spur to begin his mission to repay those who helped him during his childhood and continues to receive treatment. He said, "The fantastic kindness of all those who donated brought plenty of smiles to the faces of all those who received the generosity. We're always grateful for the exceptional and heartwarming support, and we extend our enormous thanks to everyone who helped us achieve this incredible record of eggs that would not be possible otherwise, and all those who continue supporting Play to Give all year round to help us do our fantastic work."
Mini owners, sign up for one of the region's most popular motoring charity events, the Italian Job Mile of Mini, returning this year on Sunday, the 26th of April. Now in its sixth year, the highlight is calling on owners of both classical and modern Mini models to take part in an exciting, safe and family-friendly driving day, all in support of children and young people experiencing mental health challenges. The event will begin at 9 a.m. at the iconic Mini Plant Oxford, before participants follow a scenic route through Oxfordshire and into South Warwickshire. Each team will receive a specially produced Italian job route book to guide them along the way. For the first time, the drive will culminate at Mini UK HQ, with awards presented, including for the oldest Mini taking part. Visit italianjob.com/mile-of-minis.
A rare masterpiece has traveled from Oxfordshire to Rome for a major art exhibition. Gian Lorenzo Bernini's 17th century bust of Pope Urban VIII, part of the Blenheim Palace collection, is now on display at the Palazzo Barberini as part of Bernini e I Barberini exhibition. The exhibit explores the artist's influential relationship with his first major patron, Maffeo Barberini, who became Pope Urban VIII in 1623, and has been curated by Andrea Bacci and Maurizia Ciccioni. Carmen Alvarez, Collections and Conservation Manager at Blenheim Palace, said, "It is rare that we loan any of our artworks, and for Blenheim Palace, lending such a celebrated work from our collection is an incredible honor. It allows us not only to support Dr. Andrea Bacci and Maurizio Ciccioni in this exceptional exhibit, but also to showcase the splendor and quality of the palace's collection to a global audience. If you happen to be in Rome, we warmly encourage you to visit this beautifully curated exhibition.
Abingdon's historic market square burst into rhythm and colour over the weekend as Morris dancers took to the cobbles for a spirited celebration of spring. Bells jingled, sticks clashed, and ribbons flew as troops from near and far revived centuries-old traditions. Locals and visitors alike gathered over Easter to watch the spectacle, cameras at the ready, as the dancers performed beneath the gaze of the town hall. Novice Tom Fowler performed with Harry Knight, who was also joined by Rob Beaver. Morris dancing has a very long, well-documented history in Abingdon, going back at least to the 16th century. The parish church accounts of St. Helens record a payment in 1560 for Morris bells, which is widely taken as the first clear evidence of Morris dancing being practised in the town. The Morris dancer said afterwards, "Thanks to everyone who came and saw us at the Abingdon Easter Extravaganza."
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496-062280. That is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skills. If you need advice on these, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.